Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
This is Ben Gujan with Quad City Arts, and welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today, I'm talking art with illustrator and printmaker Glenn Lowry, whose work will be featured at the upcoming Riversance Festival of Fine Art, September 20th and 21st. Glenn, welcome to Talking Art. Glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I have to say that you are, I moved to the Quad Cities in 2019, and before I even met you, I knew your work because I feel it is very widespread and ubiquitous in the Quad Cities as one of our very original, very creative creators and artists here.
I work hard.
Yeah.
So it's and it's about getting out there. And that was, I had just, I think I moved here 2016, mm-hmm. maybe at the beginning, 17 there. But yeah, it's just getting out there and just finding all kinds of opportunities and different avenues that will support me and my work. And yeah, and that's getting out there.
Yeah, well, and I want to talk about your work because it's so unique. And if you've not seen any of Glenn's work, it's extremely colorful, kind of, I think, pop culture referential.
Yeah, I would call it pop art.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's vibrant, it's colorful, it just kind of blasts at you off the walls in the best way. So just tell us a little bit about your work and what you do and how you got there.
Yeah, it is pop art, and it's bold, bold shapes, bright colors, and I usually want it to read from across the room. Like I want it to quickly identify. I want you to be smiling and liking it. You're grabbing other people to pull them over. You're talking about it. Like I've already done my job.
You know? Sure.
So, I grew up in the 80s, so yeah. I just love pop culture in general. But like just starting with children's books, mm-hmm. like illustrated children's books, like just always early memories of my father and my grandmother, and those illustrations. And that gave way into cartoons, of course.
Yeah.
And then later on, comic books. And that's what I originally wanted to do, was to illustrate for comic books. And that's what took me to college.
Sure.
Sort of going for that path. And then I quickly realized that I did not want to draw comic books in college. And it was just easier just to simplify that as an illustrator and just yeah. trying to find my voice and my language in my drawing as an illustrator, which is still quite a struggle. I took a screen printing course there in college. And as soon as I took that, I had fallen in love with the process of printmaking. And I knew it was another mode and craft of operating and to make my illustrations, something beyond just an inkjet print
right.
of something, which is something like a big fine painters, oil painters. We're talking thousands of dollars. Those are something that they usually invest in to allow their work to be consumable by everyone at any price point, and with the screen printing, that just it's just another craft, it's another layer with the drawing, illustrating. So and that's where the pop art sort of comes from.
Yeah, well, and I love that you talked about just being able to like make people happy with the work, because I think that's something that your work is so effective at, because in all your pieces, and You know, I think about like the punk rock raccoon or the dinosaur on the little scooter.
Right.
You know, there's a playfulness and a funness about them that when you see them, you just smile and you say, oh, that's really fun. I love that.
Right. It is about finding like something about the piece that has personality that makes it whimsical.
Yeah.
And that character and personality in the piece is what allows people an entry point to it and find themselves in it,
mm-hmm.
or find a friend that they know that they want to share it with. And that's the way it works.
Yeah, I mean we featured your I think it was the T-Rex on the motorcycle.
Or
it was the Velociraptor. Yeah, the Velociraptor on the motorcycle as our River Sound shirt several years ago.
Yes.
And, I mean, that thing went like hotcakes.
Yeah.
Like, we had zero left. Usually we have a bunch of T-shirts left that
yeah.
we give out, but, like, your work just speaks to people because of the funness and that whimsy that you talk about. Mm-hmm. What do you look for? What are you thinking of when you're putting the compositions together?
Well, I always keep a notebook with me. So having tools and mechanisms in the practice to sort of capture ideas, because you never know when they're gonna stumble upon you. Or you just sort of pluck them out of the air when they happen, and it's just so always writing down things and notes so when an idea is there I can log it but these days it's thumbnail sketches, mm-hmm. sort of notes about shapes within the composition, and then usually a color palette and sort of color proportions and how I want to use those in the shapes.
Yeah.
And things like that. Maybe I tend to design in sets as well, mm-hmm. too. So notes about that and how they all sit together or how they'll share things.
Yeah, well, I've seen like you have lots of kind of related series, you know, of the different dinosaurs on different bikes or variations on like the punk rock raccoon.
Right.
You know, and it's so fun. You've been at Riversons for several years now.
Yeah, it's one of my oldest festivals that I've done, and it's because it's a local one, getting started, working a part-time job and hustling mm-hmm. festivals and parking lots and cafes and stores like that. It was one of the initial first ones I got started at with. So yeah, I would have to say at least six years now.
Yeah, I mean, we love having you there. This year, it's going to be September 20th and 21st. You'll be there. There's about, I think, 95 artists we've got this year, so it's going to be a great weekend. Hopefully, as always, the weather holds up for it, because we've had some sketchy weather years in the past. You never know. But yeah, I'm so excited to see your work there, and it brings such a different feel to Riversons, because Riversons is a fine art festival. And so you have lots of artists there who are doing fine art, you know, more
sure.
oil painting and watercolors or abstract sculpture. And your work just always pops out of that because of that whimsy and the playfulness you bring.
Right.
With a lot of the different shows you do, do you notice that your work pops in that way?
Sure. Well, it's about talking to the people and what they say upon entering the tent. The most common expletive I get is "this is fun."
Like, sure.
it's pretty simple like that, or "this is unique." The kids like to say that this is a vibe. You know, that's how they'll contextualize it in their language. But it's talking to the people. I usually do better at shows that are young, that have a young makeup, or are have music, so there mm-hmm. is a engaging environment and stuff like
sure.
that. So a younger sort of fresher crowd and stuff like that is what usually does it.
Yeah, I noticed you've been working with Kill Pop a lot, or showing at their
their
markets.
Sure, yeah. There's a lot of different local people. Philip Forces, Kill Pop. He does have a unique opportunity at the corner there in Davenport to put together a market, and he doesn't charge a fee. It's just about having fun down there, but. You got just a couple blocks away. You got the Eclectic Market with Suzanne as mm-hmm. well. But there's always been fun places like the Abernathys. They host and work with artists through there. I've had my work as well. We used to have Crafted Quad Cities. There used to be all kinds of different art festivals in downtown. We have the Indie Market during Alt Currents now, but
right.
we used to have like Becky Fest and mm-hmm. some of these other ones. And there's a lot of opportunities for someone who is starting off as an artist to sort of explore the field and find their people, find their market, and who what their image speaks to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you said you came here in 2016. What brought you here?
Oh, I was born and I grew up in Davenport.
Okay.
And then other places in the local area, and I moved away to Minneapolis for college, mm-hmm. and then I stayed there for 17 years.
Oh, awesome!
So
that's a great city.
It is. It's very approachable. They have lots of great museums up there. Mm-hmm. The Walker, the traditional one. They have lots of great parks. They really care about making biking important on the street. So it just really, it was everything I needed. But I had been there for a while, and my family was getting older, my parents, so I moved back home to be with my parents. And I'm super glad that I did, because I was still struggling in Minneapolis, it's a big city, and going to a cafe and trying to get your art on the walls, the manager or the owner may not be as open or helpful with you as for getting the art on the walls or making sure that it's being promoted, or someone could take sales. Like, you're making sales, and they care about the artist and not just so much, we just need something on the walls this
right.
month. And so sort of working that and trying to find those spaces was a little more difficult in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
To where coming home, it's much more approachable and much more friendly. Working with Ben at Roz Talks, which is an amazing space for supporting the arts as well. Through Midcoast, when they were still operating here, for Bucktown downtown, and getting into that artist market and meeting those people, to getting into the Artery in Rock mm-hmm. Island, and meeting those people, and then just spreading out from there as you meet people, you find other opportunities, and you grow within the market space.
Yeah, it. Excuse me, getting over a cold, but. You know, it's interesting that dichotomy between a big city and a smaller city. And I was a New Yorker for 11 years. And, you know, I went there as an actor. And it's like, I'm going to go and be famous. And someone's going to see your work and say, come on up. And you get there and you realize, no, like, there's actually a grind to achievement or to being recognized in a city like that, you know, where it's definitely, in a town of this size, much easier to just have those conversations with people. You know, when you're in the city, I found, like, everyone's running their hustle and their game. And for you to kind of break into their attention sphere, you know, I managed a restaurant in the city for several years, and we had art on the walls of local artists, and it was always much more just like, if an artist came up to me and was like, hey, can we put your art on the walls? I'd be like, yeah, this guy's taking his out in a month, you know. But you're so concerned, where I think here you can have a more holistic approach to your business and your relationships that you form.
Right, right. It's just easier to connect with the people. It doesn't matter where you are in the Quad Cities. It just feels like it's always local.
Yeah.
To where, like, even like Chicago, it's just these small little niche pocket neighborhoods, and if you don't know they're there, you could overlook opportunities and things like that.
Right.
So and like you said, it takes that grind. It takes those hours. The boots on the ground to do that investigation and to take risks and to jump into opportunities and to see if they work, and that's the only way you're going to be able to find that, and you'll constantly be making mistakes, and you just want them to be new mistakes as you grow.
Right.
Like as you change and you find different avenues and places to sell your work.
Yeah. You talked about the 80s earlier, being a child of the 80s, and I'm also a child of the 80s. And it's been interesting for me because I have a young son now. And so I'm, you know, trying to introduce him to these things, of course, that I grew up with. And, you know, giving him space to find the things he likes, but also like, buddy, check this out. This is awesome. And he has kind of fallen in love with Pee-wee's Playhouse, which is a huge thing that I grew up with and loved. And I, you know, you mentioned that reference and I immediately thought about Pee-wee and like that, just that very 80s pop style. What is it about that that appeals to you?
Oh, geez. I don't know. It's the boldness of it. I think it's the immediacy in which it speaks.
Yeah.
I said, I love cartoons growing up, and Pee-wee's Playhouse is certainly one of my top favorites.
Yeah.
I do have the box set recently. I collect comic books as well too. Mm-hmm. And that's something sits in like a traditional, well, nowadays we have a, back in the 80s, in the newsprint, it was it's that printing process that was so interesting.
Yeah.
And so it's about the simplicity of the color palette that they could only use within the printing.
Right.
And then the process then dictates the tool set that you could use, and so it develops what comic books look like because of its limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays we have digital drawing and much better printing, and so you're not trapped to this one person pencils, one person colors, one person inks, and the flavor of comic books then opens up as the tool set is much larger and you can do more things with. But like that's what I like about comic books, is like the printmaking process, the limitations of tools and what has developed it. As I have worked these festivals and screen printing more more pointedly, it has informed and developed my style along the way.
Yeah. So. Well, it's such a unique medium, and I was watching a bunch of the reels that you've posted on Facebook about the process, and I would love to learn more about that because, you know, it's one of those things. I watch it and I kind of get how it works, but kind of the process of how you build the layers of the image. Mm-hmm. My mind doesn't work that way.
Sure. It's a lot of planning.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of processes, a lot of planning within the steps. There's a lot of troubleshooting. Sort of the variables when this or that isn't going right or wrong.
Sure.
But I use Photoshop to do my drawing.
Mm-hmm.
I draw at scale. That's how I get around like vectorizing or pixels or things like that.
Sure.
But Photoshop has layers, and
yeah,
screen printing is in layers.
Yeah.
I also have opacity tools in Photoshop, so I could see how one layer overlaps another layer.
Sure.
So I may draw and design statically as one layer, and then I'll separate my colors into their different layers, and then from there things have to be designed for the printmaking process. And
right.
That's how they interlock and how they overlap and over designing or undercutting different shapes so things could wiggle. But like everything, I use a photo emulsion process, so it's just like exposing a traditional photograph. Every layer gets a sheet of paper that's a negative to expose to make the stencil in the screen.
Yeah.
So, and like with everything, like the stencil making, the ink mixing, the printing itself with the registration and aligning the layers, they all have sort of troubleshooting things that you could do. It's like, well, why is this doing this? It's because this and this, and you tighten those up, and you understand why you're getting certain effects in the process. So then you can iron out those wrinkles. For consistency, and as you grow and you develop, you try new things. You're always coming across new stuff to learn. I have been printing directly to canvases recently, and that's a different substrate, and the texture itself, and how the ink will lay down. How many passes can I do before stuff starts looking gross or weird?
Right.
So, and so just once again, troubleshooting new modes of operation for printmaking as I explore and grow as an artist.
Well, now I would think too that allows you to play a lot with different color combinations of things. You know, I think about like if you're traditionally oil painting, it's like if you get a color on, you've got to either go over it or like that's not coming up. But you know, I've seen in some of your work, like where you play with different color combinations on prints, and being able to switch that up with that process, and I'm sure that gives you an amount of freedom and exploration that you're able to do with it.
Sure, some of my simpler designs, it could be really easy to swap out a color, or I have some extra colored paper on the shelf, and it's just time to pull things out, or amassing lots of different custom ink colors on the ink shelf, and then just pulling those out as well. Some of the most exploration I do in printmaking is my test prints. And that's something that's standard in the print world as well too, and that's when there's a misprint or a mishap in the edition, and it doesn't go all the way to the end of the process. It gets pulled out, it gets put into a scrap pile, and then these become things to use for like clearing a screen or checking ink, and you just sort of tossing images on there while you're just in the mode of production, and then sometimes at the end of the day when you got free time, you could really pull out the pile and you start looking through things and just layer or layer or layer. So it's you just keep putting more and more things on it. They become collages of bits and pieces. Of this design or that one, and it usually takes a year, 2 years, through a handful of designs till they feel full or finished, and it's
sure.
And that's just purely just having fun and playing around with what could happen. And
yeah,
completely all unique. So
that's so fascinating to hear, you know, because we think of a painting or a piece of artwork, and we think of it as like, oh, sat down and did the thing. But, you know, I love, you know, with any kind of piece of art, there is that developmental process that we've got to go through as we fine-tune things and really try to hone in on what's going to make it, no, this is it. This is the thing. You know, and I would imagine that this process, I know, like I've dabbled in some oil painting and finding that line of like where to stop, where you're done, Right. You know, because it's very easy to, and with oil painting, it's frustrating to me because if I go past that line, then it's like, oh, I went too far. I shouldn't have done that. Yeah. That last step. How do I get rid of that?
Yeah. A big role as an artist is having that editing process, and mm-hmm. it is having that eye for what your style is or what your language is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about identifying it so you don't push it and it becomes overwhelming or muddy. And it's just like sometimes less is more. Mm-hmm. Like especially in like a graphic art or pop art, something that tries to say something is like, how do you say it simply? And it is for that just automatic connection. To where if you have something big, large, and complex, it could be tough for the art for a viewer to enter into the piece mm-hmm. to start exploring it or to understand it. You know?
Yeah. So. Do you have certain people that like you run things by, or
oh, geez.
Kind of, or I mean, I guess other artists maybe, whether they're local or you know a national or international that you really look at and try to kind of mirror off of?
Not really.
Maybe not mirror, but at least.
I don't. I'm really terrible at staying like connected or following or following other artists or things like that. I mean, I do have like local friends that I will be like, hey, this is what I'm working on. This is an idea.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, oh, well, that's great. I love it. You know. But I don't, like, I have lots of ideas. Not all of them get fully developed. Sometimes they'll get all the way to the design process, and I'll get stuck, and it becomes a drag, and, like, I don't like it, and I will tend to shelve things, and I'll get distracted and excited about something else that
sure.
I could fully see, and I know how to finish something like that. And then a year later, I could come back to the design folders, and you're looking through those, and you're like, "Well, this is a really good idea," and I've been through some other works, and I know how to finish this one now.
Right.
Because you've explored, you've grown as an artist, and something that was you couldn't identify why you it was or wasn't working for you. Now you quickly like this needs this and this, and then. It's good. So, yeah, not all the time. Everything always gets done. Lots of ideas, but, you know. When working for myself, like, I have no deadlines or any fulfillment for a client. So, if I'm struggling with a piece, I have that ability just to set it aside for quite a while because no one's sad that it's not getting done.
Right.
But then really chasing those ideas that really excite me, mm-hmm. That in my mind's eye I could fully see done, and I don't struggle with. I usually find that those are some of my best ideas that then grab or communicate to people as well. So
yeah, well that's you know I think about that, and that's one of the great things about the freedom you get as an artist is that you can like have all these different projects that are in different stages of marination versus like if you're a home builder, you can't be like, well, we got through the framing, but we're not quite sure where we want to go yet. Right. So we're just going to leave that there for a couple years. You know, it's,
I think if you struggle with a piece, like people can see that struggle in it as well too, and that you know that feeling comes through the piece.
Sure.
Which is not a bad thing. That could be the intention that you're having with the piece if that's the agency you're looking to press upon it.
Right. Do you ever find that you get into the place where it's like, this piece came really easy? There's got to be something wrong with it because it came too easy.
No, I really don't. I really don't question the easy ones. No, those are I like all day would take those all day.
Right.
compared to the struggling ones. But like But like I said, the more you identify the easier ones and why you like them and why they came that way, the easier it is to find those ideas moving forward. So, but yeah, I don't know. Like sometimes, like I feel like a lot of people come into my booth is like it's a lot of cats or it's a lot of animals.
Yeah,
and that's something I look at too. Is I don't want to be trapped in that box of being like, well, this is the guy
animals.
that puts boots on animals. So
right.
So even though I find those pieces really fun to work on because I get to give personality to these animals, and everyone just loves animals.
Right.
But it's about finding that same enjoyment in other things. And so I like music, so it's about doing pieces about music. I love eating, so it's about food and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then still trying to find that same whimsy and that personality as well that I apply to things. So
it makes it so easy to connect to, you know, like I mentioned earlier, like when I first moved here, I saw your pieces at many different places I went, and they stand out. They have that whimsy, they have the color, and people with work that may be more abstract or more fine art, you know, I think it's more challenging for people to connect with them. And that's not a knock on them, but like you've kind of got to do the work. And I think, not saying that yours don't have depth, but like they're easy for people to connect to, mm-hmm. you know, because of that, because of all those things that we've talked about, you know,
that's the work I'm putting into it is that simplification,
is that
sort of getting to the idea of things, so.
Yeah, and it's accessible too, because it's a way, you know, you can look at an oil painting that's going to be maybe $4,500, and your pieces are priced in a way that people can get them and have that art in their home.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's so important for people to, like, I love filling my home with work from local artists.
Yeah, that's another reason why I screen print is it makes it affordable. And,
right.
Thank you, Andy Warhol. It's just, I run an art factory, and it's the hardest I've ever worked, but it's the most satisfying job that I've ever had, and it is just getting my work out there to the people that enjoy it, to when they are smiling, that they can take it home, and it's very affordable.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I really appreciate that you do is, especially at a festival like Riversance, where there are a lot of higher priced pieces, is you have your like larger framed prints that are maybe at a higher price point, mm-hmm. but you've also got kind of smaller unframed things that someone who's got 5, 10, 15, 20 bucks can pick up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, a lot of people that buy from me are like kids in college as well too.
Sure.
And that is that affordability of that loose print. Like,
yeah.
Like I do really well in like Iowa City or Madison, like these college towns. Mm-hmm. But it is these kids at that loose print, you know, leaving, and that's great, because you know they're just moving out of the house. They're really uncertain about where they're going.
Right.
And so yeah, like a big large expensive piece of art is certainly not in their current place.
Right. Did you ever, and I don't know if this died away or not, but I think it kind of came out of the pandemic. It was, I think it was called Masterworks, where you could like invest in art, and they'd offer like shares of, you know, this $6 million Basquiat, and you could buy like 10 shares in it for 50 bucks a share or something.
That's crazy.
And I had, there was a similar app that came out with sports collectibles.
Oh, okay.
Where it's like, oh, I have 10 shares of Muhammad Ali's championship belt from his fight with George Foreman. You know, and then they'd like take them to auction, and you'd either make money or lose money on it.
Sure.
But they did that same thing. They tried that same model with art, where you could buy shares in these pieces, and then when they went to auction, you made. And it was like, it was one of those things that was like kind of cool, because you're like, hey, I own a little bit of this.
Right.
But you don't get to see it in your house.
Right.
You know?
Jeez, like, well, right. It just opens things up to speculative, you know, speculative things. People that don't necessarily enjoy or appreciate it, more for just a money grab and a turnaround thing. And so it just definitely changes the market of what it is. But I mean, the art market at that level already is sort of unattainable and unapproachable to, like, unless you're in some sort of big endowed sort of museum with backing. It just becomes a tool for a museum to engage with public and sort of spread awareness and maybe diversify some sort of revenue stream for them as well.
Well, and so much of that, I feel like you're buying publicity for yourself.
Sure.
You know, like the banana tape to the wall. You know, like, I'm buying this banana tape to the wall for $85,000. Really? You're buying a chance to be a part of that story of the piece.
Sure, sure. The phenomenon that is.
Right.
Everything and why it became such a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I am so excited to have you at Riversance again this year, Glenn.
Right.
It's a really great weekend. If you've not ever gone to Riversance, you should come on out September 20th and 21st. Glenn will be there with all his incredible prints. Thanks so much for chatting. It was great learning more about you and your process, and we'll see you at the festival.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks for having me. Riversance is great.
You can find out more about Glenn at his Facebook page, Glenn Arthur Murray or Lowry on Facebook. And you can find out more about Riversance at QuadCityArts.com. I'm Ben Gujan, and this was Talking Art.